Tonight, before we get into Daniel chapter 5, I would like to set the stage for this. We have not done this before, but there are about 13 characters in the book of Daniel that we need to know about, know who they are and what part that they play in the book of Daniel. Of course, the first one that we run across in Daniel is Jehoiakim. He was the king of Judah at the time that Nebuchadnezzar came and took Daniel and the three Hebrew children and a lot of other people down to Babylon. His mother and father had named him Eliakim, but Pharaoh from Egypt had given him the name Jehoiakim. He changed it, recorded in 2 Chronicles chapter 36, verse 4. Jehoiakim ruled Judah for 11 years, from 609 to 598 B.C. That's in 2 Kings chapter 23, verse 36. Then Nebuchadnezzar is a very important character here in the book of Daniel. He was the king of Babylon, the son of Nabopolassar, who was the founder of the Babylonian Empire. And he reigned from 604 to 561 B.C., a period of 43 years. He was sole ruler of Babylon. And Daniel, you know, also ruled with him. It's interesting that Daniel, the Bible says, was set over the whole province of Babylon and was chief of the governors over all the wise men of Babylon. He was sort of like Mordecai will be later on in the Persian Empire. He was like Joseph was to Pharaoh down in Egypt. He's up there, you might say, ruling the country with Nebuchadnezzar. Now, two fellows that we've already gotten acquainted with in the first chapter were Ashpenaz and Melzar. Ashpenaz was in charge of all of the eunuchs in Nebuchadnezzar's palace. And Melzar was the eunuch who had been assigned to Daniel and the three Hebrew children especially during the 3 years that they were in this special training course that Nebuchadnezzar put them through in Babylon. Daniel, of course, is the hero of the book. He was a great and honored prophet of God. Started out about age 17 or 18, something like that, and remained in Babylon and was God's spokesman during all the time of the Babylonian Empire into the time of the Medes and the Persians. God used him mightily. He was of royal lineage. He was of a king's seed, a prince of Judah. He was given, as you remember, the Babylonian name Belteshazzar by Ashpenaz, the master of the king's eunuchs. Then there are Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. These are the three Hebrew children. We know them better by their Babylonian names that they were given, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they are especially remembered because they were the ones who were thrown into the burning fiery furnace because they would not bow down and worship the image that Nebuchadnezzar had made and set up on the plain of Dura. The three Hebrew children, they were Daniel's companions. And then Belshazzar. We'll read about him tonight in chapter 5. Belshazzar was the last king of the Babylonian Empire, and he's the one to whom the handwriting on the wall appears here in Daniel chapter 5, and he was killed the night that Babylon fell to the Medes and the Persians in the year 539 B.C. And then we will learn about two other men, both rulers of the Medo-Persian Empire. One is Darius. He is the Mede who was king in Babylon after its capture. And Daniel was honored in his kingdom, and he was made the first of three presidents who ruled at the same time over the 120 princes who were set over the kingdom by Darius in the reorganization of the kingdom. And yet we're going to find that Darius was also the one who had Daniel cast into the den of lions because he prayed to God. That's coming up. Cyrus was the other one. Cyrus was the Persian founder of the Medo-Persian Empire. He was named, his claim to fame is that he was named by Isaiah the prophet 175 years before he was born. That kind of made him famous, when especially when he found out about it and found out that God, 175 years before he was born, had already set his work for him to do. Interesting, isn't it? God had picked him out as the one who would issue the decree that the Jews would return from Babylonian captivity to Judea, and particularly to Jerusalem, and would build the temple, rebuild the temple that had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. Then there are two others. These are angels. We haven't run across them yet, but they're going to get involved in the book of Daniel. One of them is named Gabriel. The other one is named Michael. And these two angels will appear to Daniel during this time that he's given what I call the book of Revelation, found in the book of Daniel. All of the things that shall come to pass, many of them in the end time. They've not even appeared on the scene yet. And Gabriel was the one who came and showed Daniel the vision. So these are the 13 characters or people that you'll find in the book of Daniel. Now we go here to the fifth chapter, and this fifth chapter deals with Belshazzar and the drunken idolatrous feast that he has while his city is being besieged by the enemy, the Medes and the Persians. He was flaunting his safety within those great walls that surrounded him there at Babylon. Pardon me, my eyesight is failing. I was in Isaiah 5 instead of Daniel 5. Can you imagine that? That's all right, I'll find it. I have a larger print Bible, and I'm just going to have to break down and start using it, I guess. Daniel chapter 5, verse 1. Belshazzar the king made a great feast to 1,000 of his lords and drank wine before 1,000. Belshazzar, whilst he tasted the wine, commanded to bring the golden and silver vessels which his father, it was not actually his daddy, he was of the lineage of Nebuchadnezzar, he was a grandson, had taken out of the temple which was in Jerusalem, that the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines might drink therein. Now listen, these, go back to the book of Exodus, and you'll find that these golden vessels were made in the days of Moses by men who were especially gifted of God to work in this particular art in fashioning these exotic golden vessels which were consecrated to God, which had been sanctified, set apart to be used in the worship of the Most Holy God. Nothing more sacred than these vessels. Nebuchadnezzar had taken them when he looted the temple in Jerusalem and brought them down to Babylon and put them in the treasure house of his God. And now then, Belshazzar is having this feast, flaunting his safety in front of his enemies. And now then, he's going to do something unique, something spectacular, something sensational, something that would surpass all of his previous blasphemous and sacrilegious acts. He's going to desecrate the sacred vessels that were used in the worship and service of Almighty God. So he has them brought, and here he and the princes and his wives and his concubines are drinking therefrom. Then they brought the golden vessels that were taken out of the temple of the house of God, which was at Jerusalem. And the king and his princes, his wives, and his concubines drank in them. They drank wine and praised the gods of gold and of silver, of brass, of iron, of wood, and of stone. Now, notice what happens here. Some things God lets slide, and sometimes God gets a little bit angry and upset about what man is doing, and his anger just boils over, and he immediately does something about it. And in this case, he does something about it. Verse 5 says that in the same hour came forth fingers of a man's hand and wrote over against the candlestick upon the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. Then the king's countenance was changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his loins were loosed, and his knees smote one against another. I have an idea that this, the way he describes it here, it had a sobering effect upon Belshazzar, to say the least. The king cried aloud, "Bring in the astrologers, the Chaldeans, and the soothsayers." The king spake and said to the wise men of Babylon, "Whosoever shall read this writing and show me the interpretation thereof shall be clothed with scarlet and have a chain of gold about his neck and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom." Isn't that amazing? That it was the same hour in which he is desecrating these sacred vessels of God, that this, the fingers of a man's hand appears up on the wall. There was not a flash of light. There was not a deafening peal of thunder. Just in the quietness of the hour, the fingers begin to write on the wall. So he was perplexed and he was scared, and we're going to find that his wise men are unable to console him. It says, "Then came in all the king's wise men, but they could not read the writing nor make known to the king the interpretation thereof." Then was King Belshazzar greatly troubled, and his countenance was changed in him, and his lords were astounded. They just couldn't get over this. Verse 10. Now the queen, this queen is not his wife. I think she was probably Nebuchadnezzar's wife. She would probably have been his grandmother. But now look, a lot of time has passed. A lot of time. 70 years, just about it. Then the queen, by reason of the words of the king and his lords, came into the banquet house. And the queen spake and said, "O king, live forever. Let not thy thoughts trouble thee, nor let thy countenance be changed. There is a man in thy kingdom, in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And in the days of thy father, light and understanding and wisdom, like the wisdom of the gods, was found in him, whom the king Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, the king, I say, thy father, made master of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. For as much as an excellent spirit and knowledge and understanding, interpreting of dreams and showing of hard sentences and dissolving of doubts were found in the same Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will show the interpretation." Then was Daniel brought in before the king. And the king spake and said unto Daniel, "Art thou that Daniel which art of the children of the captivity of Judah, whom the king my father brought out of Jewry? I have heard of thee, that the spirit of the gods is in thee, and that light and understanding and excellent wisdom is found in thee. And now the wise men, the astrologers, have been brought in before me, that they should read this writing and make known unto me the interpretation thereof. But they could not show the interpretation of the thing. And I have heard of thee, that thou canst make interpretations and dissolve doubts. Now, if thou canst read the writing and make known to me the interpretation thereof, thou shalt be clothed with scarlet, and have a chain of gold about thy neck, and shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. So he makes that same promise to Daniel that he had to his wise men. Now he's talking about the third ruler in the kingdom, because at this particular time, Belshazzar's daddy, Nabonidus, was king of Babylon. Belshazzar was ruling with his father. They were jointly ruling the kingdom. But son Belshazzar has taken the lower position of second king, we'll say. And so the highest that he can promote Daniel is the third king, the third ruler of the kingdom. Now, remember at this time, it has been about 65 years since Daniel had interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dream in chapter 2. By this time, Daniel is an old man. He is over 85 years old. And that's old, isn't it, fellas? That's pretty old. Now, you'll notice here that the point that we want to make is that it takes a man of God to understand the writing of God. We read in the New Testament, Paul will tell us later, that the natural man receiveth not the things of God, their foolishness unto him, neither can he know them, because they are spiritually discerned. And these astrologers, Chaldeans, soothsayers, magicians of Babylon, did not have that spiritual connection with Almighty God. The spirit of the holy gods did not dwell in them as he dwelt in Daniel. Now there are about five gross sins that brought about the downfall of the kingdom of Babylon. When you go back and study the history of it at that time, you'll find that one of those was materialism. Another one was atheism, because they worshiped many gods, not one particular one. Idolatry, they worshiped idols. Drunkenness and licentiousness were some of the sins that brought down the kingdom of Babylon. And if you will apply those sins to the nations that have existed on this earth since that time for the past 2,500 years, you will find that nation after nation and kingdom after kingdom has followed in the same footsteps that the Babylonians followed to their fall. Now, we're going to find here that Daniel is going to read and interpret this writing to the king. And he's going to be made the third ruler in the kingdom. And his rule as the third ruler of the kingdom of Babylon is going to be one of the shortest reigns on record. It's going to be the smaller portion of one night. He's not going to last very long. And that chain is not going to have a chain of gold around his neck. He's not going to have time to turn green in case it's not the real thing. Notice what happens here. Then, verse 17, then Daniel answered and said before the king, let thy gifts be to thyself and give thy rewards to another. Yet I will read the writing unto the king and make known to him the interpretation. O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar thy father a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And he did. He really did. The 43-year reign of Nebuchadnezzar over Babylon was a time of peace. It was not, the Jews were captives, and I'm sure that they worked, but there's nothing said about the work that they performed in Babylon as captives that would in any wise compare with the slavery that they endured in Egypt during the time they were there under Pharaoh before Moses delivered them out from that. The kingdom of Babylon had peace. There was no war. There were no wars during that time. And Nebuchadnezzar was a great builder, and I'm sure that he used these Hebrews to build the great Babylon that existed in his day. He goes on to tell Belshazzar, and for the majesty that he gave him, that is, that God gave him, and you'll notice there that he's giving God credit for giving Nebuchadnezzar what he had. God gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him, whom he would he slew, and whom he would he kept alive, and whom he would he set up, and whom he would he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened in pride, he was deposed from his kingly throne. We read that in the last chapter, didn't we? He was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beasts, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he, that is the Most High God, appointeth over it whomsoever he will. Now he's reminding Belshazzar of this. And then his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart. And thou, his son, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this. You knew it, but you didn't learn anything from it. But hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven. And they have brought the vessels of his house, God's house, before thee. And thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines, have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know, and the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, thou hast not glorified. See that? Then was the part of the hand sent from him, and this writing was written. This writing, he says, comes from God. And this is the writing that was written, verse 25. Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. This is the interpretation of the thing. Mene, God hath numbered thy kingdom and finished it. Tekel, thou art weighed in the balances and art found wanting. Peres, thy kingdom is divided and given to the Medes and Persians. Then commanded Belshazzar, and they clothed Daniel with scarlet, and put a chain of gold about his neck, and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. In that night was Belshazzar, the king of the Chaldeans, slain. And Darius the Median took the kingdom, being about 62 years old. 62 years old. Now here is the setting and the events leading up to the capture of Babylon. Remember this. In 549 B.C., in the 6th year of Nabonidus, the father of Belshazzar, Cyrus the Persian had conquered the Medes. By 546 B.C., he had the Median Empire, the Empire of Media, and he had Asia Minor under his control. He also had dominion over what had been the kingdom of Assyria up in the Nineveh area. Nineveh was the capital of Assyria, you remember. And so he was in possession of all of that territory right down to the Babylonian border. Now, the king of Babylon, Nabonidus, in 538 B.C., called his son Belshazzar in, and he said, Belshazzar, I'm putting you in charge of our Babylonian army. And I want you to go out against those Medes and Persians. So he sent his army northward, led by Belshazzar. Now the kingdom was divided, we're told here. The Chaldeans over on the coast had revolted in June of that year. So he's got some internal problems in the province of Babylon. Now Cyrus and the Babylonians had a battle. And the Babylonians were driven south before him. Nabonidus, he was kind of reading the handwriting on the wall. He fled, found refuge in a town called Sippara, S-I-P-P-A-R-A. Cyrus now has the Babylonians on the run. So he's confident of victory. He appoints one of his generals, General Gobryas, to be the governor of Mesopotamia. He's already making plans. So the Persians continued on into Sippara, where Nabonidus was holed up. And on June the 14th, the city surrendered to the Persians, and King Nabonidus fled. Meanwhile, down here at Babylon, Babylon opened its gates to the Persian general Gobryas. There were two of them, Gobryas and Ugbaru, U-G-B-A-R-U, two of them. And Babylon surrendered to the Persians without opposition and without battle. Nabonidus was captured, and his son Belshazzar was slain on the 16th of June, 538 B.C. It is said that it was a full 3 days before all of the million inhabitants of the city of Babylon learned that it had been captured by the Medes and the Persians. Cyrus entered into the city, made a triumphant entry into the city on October the 3rd of that year, and that was the date that is considered the end of the Babylonian Empire, when King Cyrus marched victoriously into the city. The city had already been taken. Now, all of this is recorded on what today is known as the Cyrus Cylinder. I've seen pictures of it. It's a round cylinder that has the writing on it that tells all about the conquest and fall of Babylon by Cyrus. That's still in existence. Now, Cyrus had captured Nabonidus, the king of Babylon. He'd killed his son Belshazzar, but Nabonidus was still alive, and he made him the governor of Carmania. At that time, Carmania was a province that was way east of Persia. He gave him control of that. He was a sub-king to Cyrus. He answered to him. But he was far enough away from his Babylonian people that he could not have any influence over them, don't you see? Before his death in 529 B.C., Cyrus made his son Cambyses king of Babylon, 531 B.C. He ruled the empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, for 10 years and committed suicide in 521 B.C. And after his death, the Babylonians, led by a fellow by the name of Nebuchadrezzar. not Nebuchadnezzar, but Nebuchadrezzer. He was the son of Nabonidus. They revolted against the Medes and the Persians, and after a two-year siege, they took control of the city. Do you remember how well fortified it was? After a two-year siege, the Persian army had to recapture the city of Babylon. And this is the time, and you've heard of this, I'm sure, how that they divided the Persian army up into three groups. One of the groups was up above the city. Now remember that the Euphrates River flowed right down through the middle of the city of Babylon. One third of them got up here and they diverted the flow of water from the Euphrates River off out here somewhere else and caused it to dry up from that point on down. And they had another group of men who were there on the north side of the city where the river entered the city. They had another group down on the south side where the Euphrates River exited the city. So after the river bed was dry, they marched the one group in from the north and another group in from the south, and they entered in the city through an unguarded gate, and Babylon fell again, and that was in the month of June of 519 B.C. Now, an inscription is found and exists today that says, Cyrus diverted the Euphrates into a new channel and, guided by two deserters, marched by the dry bed into the city while the Babylonians were carousing at a feast of their gods. Now that makes it sound like the night that Belshazzar was slain, because it mentions Cyrus, but Cyrus, by this time, by 519, had been dead for 10 years. So, history has got its lines mixed up somewhere down through there. This may have been Darius, and probably was, because his reign began in 521 B.C., But back to Daniel chapter 5, someone wrote a famous ode, we'll call it, about that. It says, at the feast of Belshazzar and a thousand of his lords, while they drank from golden vessels, as the book of truth records, in the night as they reveled in the royal palace hall, they were seized by consternation. 'Twas the hand upon the wall. See the brave captive Daniel as he stood before the throng and rebuked the haughty monarch for his mighty deeds of wrong. As he read out the writing, 'twas the doom of one and all, for the kingdom now was finished, said the hand upon the wall. See the faith, zeal, and courage that would dare to do the right, which the Spirit gave to Daniel. 'Twas the secret of his might. In his home in Judea, or a captive in the hall, he understood the writing of his God upon the wall. So our deeds are recorded. There's a hand that's writing now. Sinner, give your heart to Jesus, to his royal mandates bow. for the day is approaching. It must come to one and all when the sinner's condemnation will be written on the wall. I like that. And that's Daniel chapter 5. Now, next week, when we get into the 6th chapter, we're going to find that Daniel is going to be cast into the den of lions.